mute your mic. Yes, so I was saying that in the absence of the chairperson, we have to elect an acting chairperson. The chair indicated that he won't be available until Friday, so I request that we elect an acting chairperson until Friday. Just trying to check if we have a quorum. I think we've got Honorable Swart, we've got Honorable Horn, Honorable Maseko Jele, Honorable Nivod Drachen, Honorable Lindbach, Honorable Janji, and Honorable Yako from the EFF. So we do constitute a quorum. So I am going to open the floor now for nominations for the position of chairperson. Honorable.
Wilma has a hand up.
Yes, you are recognized.
Yes, I would like to nominate the Honorable Richard Janki as our acting chair until Friday.
Do we have a seconder for that nomination?
Yes, I second.
Yes.
Okay.
I also support.
This is useful. My hand is up.
Yes, Honorable Brembas, you are recognized.
Thank you. I nominate the Honorable Swart.
Do we have a seconder for Honorable Swart?
Nonage Werner, I'll second that.
Any other nomination? Okay, we have got two nominations, and therefore we'll have to vote for the positions. Those who are in favor of Honorable Janji, can you please raise up your hands? Or maybe just state for the record. Honorable
Maseko Jele.
Yes.
Mufokeng.
Number two.
Three. Maseko Jele.
Yes, we've got three so far.
Niho Drukin, do you have that?
Yes.
Janji himself.
Yes, I say God myself.
Yourself. You don't need to be spoken for.
Okay, and then
no, I thought that maybe the gadget is a problem. That's why I said Janji himself.
Now, if the gadget is a problem, you don't know if he's even available, so you can't speak.
No, I saw him is in.
I support that.
And then those in favor of Honorable Swart?
Reichenbach?
Horn?
Swart. Okay. I'm not sure if Honorable Breckenbach and Honorable, okay, let's say.
You're not sure if what? Nobody can hear you.
Honorable Yako, are you?
Morning, everybody.
Okay, I choose
to abstain. Thank you very much.
Okay, no, thank you.
I'm still quite new.
Okay, no, thank you. Okay,
no, but you mustn't be afraid.
I'm not.
Okay, no, I think Mr. Janji has got, you know, more votes than Mr. Swart. And
but how many votes does Mr. Janji have?
He has got four, and Mr. Swart has got three.
That's very close, Chair. Very close.
Very close.
I think we must recount.
Yeah,
no,
I want to recount.
No,
you want a recount? No recount, please.
Honorable Janji.
Congratulations, Honorable Janji. It was a wonderful election. And congratulations from my side.
Thank you,
Honorable Breitenbach, for the nomination.
Mr. Janji?
Thank you very much, Honorable Members.
Mr. Janki, may I have a word with you?
I will note you now, Honorable Breitenbach. Thank you very much, Members, to start the meeting. Thank you, Honorable Swart and Honorable Gladys Breitenbach. before I proceed, you wanted to say something?
I do, thank you. I can't stay on the meeting the whole time. Please don't regard that as a reflection on your good self. Mr. Horn will represent us. And two, try hard to remember, less is always more. Thank you.
Just before you desert, you disappear, just want you to be parliamentary in the meeting. We don't use shut up in the meeting, the portfolio committee.
I was talking to my dog in whichever way I would like.
But we don't do that. You are in parliament. Thank you, Honorable Breitenbacher. Your apology is noted.
Okay, and then one last thing, please, before you move on.
Yes.
The DA would again like to extend its sincerest condolences to the ANC and particularly the members of this committee on the passing of Honorable Muhammad.
Thank you very much for those kind words.
Honorable Dianchi, Steve Swart here.
Yes, Honorable Swart.
Again, congratulations on your appointment, your election, and may I also just join the DA in again expressing our deepest condolences on the passing on Advocate Isha Muhammad, who is a close friend of mine over the years when he was in justice as well in the department, and we will sorely miss him. Please again accept our condolences from the ACDP to the ANC, to his family and friends. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. I'm sure I can have a member of the ANC wants to respond to that. If there's any, I see Honorable J.K. Mufuken.
Thanks, Chairperson, and Chair, thank you very much. I think our condolences too to the Muhammad family. May his soul rest in peace. Chair, I will be having a situation where I am placed. I'm in the same place with the Honorable Magwanishi, which actually he's speaking now in the Intelligence Committee. Hence, I joined you. But if you don't see me later, you must know that it's not about me missing. The gadgets in this place are not allowed. I've been giving only 30 minutes. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Before you give us more information, we really appreciate that you're here. Honorable members, I, with those few words of condolences from colleagues about our own colleague, Honorable Muhammad, we couldn't meet last week, and I think you know the reason why we couldn't. We really are saddened by his sudden passing, and may his soul rest in peace. We'll forever remember him in this committee. He was an ever-present figure in the Justice and Correctional Services Committee. I would want us to proceed, honorable members, so that We honor the request of Honorable Gladys Breitenbach of less is more. So with that, I think the agenda has been sent to all of us. Today is a very important meeting. We are attending to a matter of national importance, issues of gender-based violence, in terms of the kind of interventions that both the legislature as well as the executive must do. The agenda has been sent to us about the three bills that are going to be presented for our discussions and onward processing. And I would like, I think the Deputy Minister is present with us. I think he's leading the delegation, so that I can ask him to introduce the matters, and then we get those presentation. Honorable John Jeffrey.
Chair or acting chair, thanks very much. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity. The delegation from the department, I think, is led, as far as I can see, by the acting DG Calais Pillay, who's also the DDG for Legislative Development, which is the branch that produces the legislation. Then I've seen Ms. Vilna Buerter, I think. I've seen Mr. Cyril Roberts. I've seen Virginia Letswalo, Delene Clark. So there are a number of people I might have missed. I might have missed somebody, but they would be doing the presentations. The three bills are as a result of an attempt to tighten up their amendment bills. They're an attempt to tighten up existing laws relating to gender-based violence and sexual offences. It arises from the presidential summit and the declaration coming out of the summit that this must be done. Effectively, it is tightening up the Domestic Violence Act. That's the Domestic Violence Amendment Bill. It is making changes to the Sexual Offences Act with regard to the category of crimes and the National Register of Sex Offenders, who gets on it, how is that register, who must be checked on the register for employment. And then the criminal laws, the general one is on issues relating to bail and other such things. So I think there will be presentations on each bill. What we've done, I mean, in terms of the process, the bills were put out for public comment just before the lockdown. There was a request for an extension, and the comments were made and they were taken on board. Maybe just to say we've opted to go wider. So there may be some aspects that are controversial, but we'd rather have them in so Parliament can debate them rather than out, and then it becomes more difficult to put them in later. Two of the bills have been introduced already. They were all approved by Cabinet over a fortnight ago. So the sexual offences is, I think, Bill 16, I think, or 6, and criminal law is Bill 7 or 17. Can't remember how many bills we've got. And the third one, the domestic violence bill, is in the process of being introduced. So I guess as far as the briefing on that bill, it would need to be considered an informal briefing. But if I could then hand over to, I think the best would be to hand over to Acting DG Calais Pillay.
Okay, thank you, Honorable DM. Kale Pile, with your team, maybe just before you start, I've just forgotten to also welcome Honorable Member Yoli Sayako. I suppose you're standing in for Honorable Josie, who is in that other committee, but if you're also going to be part of this committee, please feel free. As a member of Parliament, you're joining a very important family. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Pile?
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, Honourable Members, and our Deputy Minister. The team is ready to start with the presentation. I don't have anything further to add to the introduction that has been given, except that the team will be led by Ms. Teresa Ross, and I think we are ready to proceed with the presentation on the first bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's get straight to the presentation and be precise and raise the important issues as well. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning. I hope all of you can hear me.
We can hear you. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. I'm Ina Buerta and I'll do the presentation on the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act Amendment Bill. I'll put on the slide now, just now. Can you see the slide?
Not yet. I only see in water.
Let me just see here. Why doesn't share? Okay, share. I think I'll be there now. Yes, can you see it now?
Not yet.
Not yet. Let's put it on. Let me just see. I'll go and start from the beginning again. Let me just see. There's the PowerPoint. Okay, host is sharing. Okay, this is screen. Okay. Can you hear me?
We've been hearing you, but want to see the presentation. We can't see.
I'll tell you what appears on my screen at this moment is the host disables me to screen to share the screen.
Bonani, can you please share the screen?
Not I didn't share. I'm too blind up on my words.
IT and Bonani, please, we're running out of time. We want to start the meeting. Bonani? Can you attend to the matter urgently? Committee coordinator?
Yes, Chair, it's here. We're trying to sort it out with IT, Chair. Can you maybe just get a minute? Because I think we must try and give Ms. Porter power to enable her to share the screen. We're trying to sort that out, Chair.
Okay. Sorry for that, honorable members and members of the public who are with us. We have a little bit of a glitch.
Honourable Chair, apologies, it's Wilma.
Yes, Honourable.
Yes, Chair, thank you. Can Ms. Pillay or her delegation, just 2 seconds for the interpreter.
Okay.
While we're waiting for IT to resolve the problem to share the screen, can Ms. Pillay and her team, can they give us the first presentation, the name of the presentation? I'm just at the moment looking for the correct presentation that was sent to us so that when they proceed, I have the right document, because I use a different device to read the presentation.
Yes. Ms. Boata, can you also just take us which will be your first presentation, second and third, so that people can follow, the members can follow. Whilst you are sorting for the IT problem, can you indicate?
I'll do so. The heading of the presentation is criminal law, sexual offences and related matters, Amendment Act, Amendment Bill 2020, briefing to Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services on 31 August, I think. I've got mine as 1st September, I changed it. Yes, that is the heading of the first page.
Thank you. I'm sure Honourable Obama has taken a note of that.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Fia, this is taking too long now. We knew we have this meeting. I can't accept that we're having such technical glitches from both sides, both from the department and also from the committee side. Can you please just attend to this matter? Really unacceptable that we have this.
Chair, just doesn't everyone have the presentations? I mean, if it's not possible to put it on the screen. And then also the committee section has the presentations. Can they not put it up from their side? And the presenters, starting with Ms. Werter, can just say next slide when it needs to be moved.
Okay.
No, but it doesn't allow me that one.
Can we, instead of sharing it, can we on your side?
Sorry, Chair?
Yes?
Can I proceed?
Come again?
Sorry, can I proceed?
I must just check with the members. Members, you want to proceed without putting up the presentation? Members, there's a suggestion from the GM.
Yes, Chair. Chair?
Yes?
I currently don't have the presentation with me. I'm wondering if perhaps the secretary can just forward it to me on the side by email. Then I'll just follow it up on there.
Okay. Pia and Bonani, please, can you assist us here now? We have to move.
Chair, my apologies for what is happening. Bonani seems not to be having a network due to electricity problems on his side. Now, as he's the host, he has disabled anyone from sharing. So now he needs to get back to the meeting so he can give people powers to share the presentation. I will try and email the honorable member who doesn't have the presentation. He needs to come back to the meeting and give everyone in the meetings powers to share. But I see now Ms. Southie to D. Tennyson, I think, I don't know how he or she got powers as a host. But I see on our list, she's the host now. I'm hoping if she can enable us to share, because the host must enable us and anyone who's in the meeting to be able to share documents. That's the problem we have. Since Bonani was the host, he's been on and off. He hasn't left the powers for us to share. That's the problem we have. My apologies for this. Because of his network, that is not able to come back to the meeting. He's trying to get a place where he can get the network.
That's fine. In the meantime, can the email be forwarded to Ms. Yago? And just to check, Honorable Velma, if your team can do that. If not, we are going to have to ask Ms. Buerda to take us through the presentation and talk to it. Honorable Velma, are you able to do that now that you've made the host?
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, Chair. I don't know why they made Trudy the host, but my interpreters don't have the documents, so I don't know how, you know, it's only for me. Why she's the host there, I have no idea. I don't know if Trudy can maybe explain. I don't know.
Whilst we're waiting for Bonani to come back, Honorable Buerda, Ms. Buerda, can you start to make the presentation? And I'm hoping that Sia will forward the email to Ms. Yako so that she has it.
Chair. Just before Ms. Buerda starts, I'm not sure why, if Ms. Vilna Nivodrushin wanted to be made chair, she should have suggested that rather than having her team take over the meeting. That's a joke. The other is that, Chair, you said that the problems were with Parliament and the Department. If you can please correct it, the technical problems seem to be with Parliament.
Now I understand it, because the host is disabled, so I take that back.
Chair? Okay. Chair, Wilma here?
Hello?
Chair, to Wilma, yes. I would just like to know from the Department if they have the exact date of the document, because the presentation from my email says it's the 25th of August and it's not today's date. So I don't know if that was sent to the committee secretary, an updated one was sent to the committee secretary, because there's too many emails on the presentations on the email. So at the moment, the one that I have is the 25th of August. Is that the one that we're dealing with now? So that I just know that I have the correct one.
The one that we have, we all have that date, but the document is the same, unless otherwise informed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Chair, I can confirm.
Well, Buerda, please, can you start?
Before we start, 25th.
Yes, I've clarified that. Can you now start with the presentation?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And the deputy and good morning to everybody, starting with the members. Our deputy minister has already indicated to you where this whole exercise and the changing of the legislation originates from. And you will see on my first slide, I referred to the president's announcement that we need to do something to address the scourge of gender-based violence. And the only reason why I also then want to draw the committees once again to that is for the exact reason that the deputy minister indicated. We would like the committee to look at the provisions of this bill within that context of the summit that was held and the commitments indicated by the president. Chair, then secondly, you will note that I have not in my presentation followed the provisions of the bill as it is. And the reason why I didn't do that is because of the fact that you will be able to understand the content and the changes that we affected if we do it in a different way. So we can go to slide 3. Thank you very much. There you will see how we did it. We categorized the amendments into two categories. The first category dealing with offenses.
Okay. Just pause. Honorable Jayla, please mute. Please mute. Thank you. Proceed, Ms. Bota.
Thank you very much. As I said, the first category deals with offenses and reporting duties in respect of the suspected sexual abuse of children and persons who are mentally disabled. The second category are the provisions that seeks to change Chapter 6 of the Act, which deals with the National Register for Sex Offenders. And the members may remember that in terms of the 2007 Act, there was this National Register for Sex Offenders that was created and which provided that the names of people who were convicted of certain sexual offences, names must be on the register if the offence relates to a child or a mentally disabled person. Can we go to the next slide, please? The first categories of amendments that we were of the bill aim to introduce a new offence of sexual intimidation to protect persons from threats of imminent sexual harm. That is the first. I will later unpack exactly what that means. The second is that it extends the ambit of the offence of incest to provide for additional protection to children. You will get that at clause 3. And then also to extend, as I already indicated, the reporting duty of persons who suspect that sexual offences have been or are being committed against children. So the next slide, please. Okay. What we have in Section 5 at the moment is that Section 5 to provide that the person who inspires the belief in another person that he or she will be sexually violated is guilty of the offense of sexual violation. What we can say here is that part of that is a confirmation of what was in the common law to say if you threat somebody, make a threat to somebody, it equals an offence of assault. But the question was raised worded it in Section 5.2. Why can't we extend this to include other sexual offences as well? So you will see that Clause 2 of the bill aims to delete then this limited form of protection that is in Section 5.2. And you will then see that we will have a clause 4, which aims to replace it with a new offence with a wider ambit. And that offence we call a sexual intimidation, offence of sexual intimidation, in order to prohibit persons from intimidating others into believing that they will be subjected to or forced to commit certain sexual offences. That is clause 4. Then clause 4, if you look at that in the bill, you will see that it's a whole long list of sexual acts that are now prohibited. And sorry, this is not on the slide, I'm just explaining it. You will see that in clause 4, a whole list of sexual acts that now will constitute sexual intimidation. I'm still then on page, starting with incest. Thank you very much. As you are aware that certain people can't get married. That is because of blood relationships and affinity and also adoption. Now what we have in section 12 of the Act at the moment is an offence of incest. But this offence is limited to acts of consensual sexual penetration between persons who may not lawfully marry each other on account of the relationships that I've mentioned. Now, the question was raised, why do we not afford protection to children, not only against sexual penetration, but also to sexual violation? So hence, you will see in clause 3 of the bill, we try to then extend the ambit of section 12 to include acts of sexual violence and not only acts of sexual penetration. And that's only where children are involved. And I will later also then deal with the clause as well. Then if you can turn to the next page, you will see there's also a provision later in the Act section 56.4 that deals with incest. It provides that a person may not be convicted of an offence in terms of section 12, that's the incest, if at the time when the act of sexual penetration was first committed, he or she was below the age of 18 years and the other person exercised power or authority over him or her, or a relationship of trust existed between the parties. Now, since the ambit of section 12 is to be extended to offer greater protection to children, where an act of sexual violation and not only sexual penetration is committed with them, we clause 19 aims to amend section 56.4 by replacing the reference to sexual penetration with sexual act, which encompasses both sexual penetration and sexual violation, to ensure that children are afforded the necessary protection. And then we've got also a new definition of sexual act. I think, Chair, it's also important just to point out that in the SORMA Act, there are different chapters that contain the definitions. So hence you will see that in certain places in the middle, or in section 40 and 72, there is this the issue of definitions, and that is where we will then deal with with the definition of sexual act. Can we go to the next slide, please? Reporting duties. There are, in terms of the present section, that's section 54, there are two duties. The one duty relates to reporting a sexual offence against the child, and the other one relates to when the sexual offence is committed against a person with a mental disability. Now, but the thresholds are different or the circumstances are different. And what we're trying to do with here is to make it the same. And I'll just read it for you what Section 54 provides for. It's the obligation to report to the police the commission of a sexual offence against a child or a person who is mentally disabled. But this is only where this person has knowledge that there is this sexual offence being committed against the child. On the other hand, in the section, it's that if you have knowledge or reasonable belief or suspicion that a sexual offence was committed against a person who is mentally disabled, you have the reporting duty. So you can see the difference in the criteria or the circumstances relating to reporting duties. And what Clause 18 aims to ensure is that the reporting duty is the same in respect of both children and both persons who are mentally disabled. Thank you. We can go to the next slide. As I already indicated, there's already a national register for sexual offences. And as you're also aware, is in terms of the Act, that the names of persons who are found guilty of certain sexual offences must, against children and persons who are mentally disabled, must be recorded in that register. And the recording of such particulars has specific effects or negative implications for, I would say, the perpetrators or the convicted person. And I will give you further information as we go on in so far as that is concerned. Here, 9.2 on slide 9, you will see that I refer to section 43 of the Act, which sets out the objects of the register, which are to protect children and persons who are mentally disabled against sexual offences. And then you will see that, first of all, you must establish and maintain a record of persons who have been convicted of a sexual offence against a child or a person who is mentally disabled. You can proceed to the next slide, please. Also there you can see what happens then is that in the case, or what is the object further of the National Sexual Offences Register is also to inform employers applying for a certificate whether or not the particulars of an employee are contained in the register. Informing a licensed authority applying for a certificate whether or not the particulars of an applicant are contained in the register, and then the same kind of aspect relating to relevant authorities such as, sorry, and there it goes, this is not on anymore, but can I continue, Chair? I see it's not on the screen.
Can I continue?
Thank you very much. And then relevant authorities, and I can immediately think of the Department of Social Development, that when dealing with fostering, kinship caregiving, temporary safe caregiving, adoption or curatorship, they must apply for a certificate whether or not the particulars of an applicant have been included in the register. And later on you will see exactly what all this means, what are the obligations. I'll give a little bit more detail about that and how the people are affected. Thank you. Next slide, please. So now we come to the nature of the amendments to Chapter 6, which is the more details about the National Register. The majority of the proposed amendments, that's clauses 1 and 5 to 17 in the bill, aim to expand the scope of the register to include particulars, and I think the following is very important, of all sex worker offenders, and not only sex offenders against children and persons who are mentally disabled. So every person convicted of a sexual offence, name will appear on the register. Secondly, the proposed amendments expand the ambit to include other vulnerable persons, namely female persons between the ages of 18 and 25, persons with physical, intellectual or mental disabilities, and persons 60 years of age or older who, for example, receive community-based care and support services. And you will later then follow what this, the effect of this inclusion of vulnerable groups, which is defined, will have. Then also very important is that the amendments seek to increase the period for which a sex offender's particulars must remain on the register before they can be removed. You can proceed to the next slide, please. Okay, and when we go into detail now, we see Section 40 defines the certain terms for purposes of Chapter 6, that is in relation to the register. Clause 5 aims to amend certain definitions in order to extend the ambit of Chapter 6 beyond the persons currently protected, namely children and persons who are mentally disabled. Now, we've included two new definitions in Chapter 6. The one is person who is vulnerable, and that is amongst others, as I've already indicated, children, persons with a disability, persons who are being cared for, being sheltered in facilities that provide services to victims of crime, and females under the age of 25. You will see it's quite a big group that will now fall under the definition of vulnerable person. And then also we deemed it necessary to have a new definition of sexual offence, so that it's not limited to sexual offences that have been committed against children or persons who are mentally disabled, but also includes sexual offences, all sexual offences that have been committed. You can go to the next slide, please. And then, as I already indicated in the beginning, many of the clauses are only consequential amendments, meaning that we replace the phrase child or person who is mentally disabled wherever it appears in the Act. We change it with person who is vulnerable. And in that way, we align it to the sections as we propose now to Chapter 6. Now, Section 48 places an obligation on persons who submit applications for fostering, kinship care, temporary safe care, giving adoption, and so forth. And in contrast to other sections to the chapter, this section does not criminalize the non-disclosure that you've been a sexual offender and that. So I would say this is just a technical amendment to correct a mistake that was made. So the clause 13 aims to amend that section by introducing an offence in respect of the non-disclosure of previous convictions for sexual offences. And in short, this is the end of the presentation, but with your permission, Chair, I just want to say a few things so that I think can help the committee to understand the difference now and what's happening now, because of the fact that we don't limit the names of offenders only to those who committed sexual offences against children and persons with mental disabilities. If you are now a vulnerable person, as is indicated, I'll now read the clause to you. The effect thereof is, apart from the fact that your name will be on the register, you will be prohibited from working with certain persons. So it's quite a major change that we inserted here, and because of the scope of the extension of the vulnerable person, it is quite significant. If you look at your bill, and you go to page 4 of the bill, you will see there the definition of a person who is vulnerable. And there you can see it's still a child, a female under the age of 25 years, a person who has been cared for or sheltered in a facility that provides services to victims, then also persons with physical, intellectual or mental disability that are taken care by institutions other and not by family members, and then also in respect of persons of 60 years or older and who receive some support and care and contact care of themselves and our institutions. That is one of the big, I would say, brands of this bill, is that it's not only children and persons with physical disability that are protected. And also what is important, I did raise it in my presentation, that the period of for removal of your name from the register has been increased. You will see that it has been increased quite substantially, because the Act allows for the removal of your name from the register. But depending on the sentence imposed, the period will be longer or it will be shorter. And of course, there's a certain offenders on, depending on the sentence, that their names can never be removed from the register. So what we've done is we have almost doubled the period for which the names of the persons who are found guilty of sexual offences, names must be on the register. And that was something also that we want to indicate to you. You will see that on page 10 of the bill, that is clause 16, that deals with that specifically. And what is also important, Chair, that I left out, that I think I just must draw your attention to, is at present the National Register is, it's confidential information, except to the extent that the employers who at this point in time take care of children or persons who are mentally disabled, that in their case, they must apply for a certificate before they can appoint that person. And the same with like creches and so forth. They can't just appoint somebody. They must first get a certificate from the registrar indicating that this person hasn't been found guilty of a sexual offence. And also, if that person is already employed, that person must be... service must be terminated. I didn't want to say must be fired. It's too insensitive. Okay, so and then the thing also what is important is, as I said, whereas it's now public, we received a recommendation that we must allow members of the public to have a look at the register, because remember now all sexual offences names will be on that register. But what we looked at, we saw that for purposes of the prohibition of certain work, the particulars of the persons are much broader than that what you will see in clause 7 on page 6. There you will see is that all that we ask the registrar is to make the full name, surname, identity number and the sexual offence of every person whose particulars have been included in the register available on the website of our department. Whereas this is more limited, whereas the other information that...
No, Ms. Botha. Ms. Botha. I want us to follow you. I thought you were wrapping up the first presentation. I still want to, because now we can't just be, we have to be with you. You seem to be talking to different presentations. I thought you were wrapping up that part so that we go to the next presentation, because given the glitches, I want us to have all the presentation and then have discussions. you also have got limited time.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. That was the last issue that I want to point out to you so that the committee's attention is drawn to this very important change.
Okay. Honourable members, so can we get, with your permission, given these glitches, can we just get all the presentation and then get into a discussion after that? Can you get to the next one, if that's possible?
Agreed, Chair. Agreed.
Thank you very much. And please be precise this time in the last two presentations so that members are going to be taking note and then engaging with the presentation. Who's next? Is it still yourself, Ms. Boete?
No, Chair. Somebody else will take over. Thank you very much.
Yes, somebody else.
I was thinking is the next bill is the domestic violence.
Yeah, who's doing that?
If the next one is
good morning, Honourable Chair.
Thank you. Is that Miss Clark?
Yes, good morning, Honourable Chair, Deline Clark.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. Please take us through the presentation.
Good morning, thank you. I'll do that. Our Honourable Deputy Minister has alluded to the fact that we have three pieces of legislation before the Portfolio Committee today, and the reason really is it flows from Article 7 of the Presidential Summit Declaration Against Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, which flowed from the hashtag Total Shutdown movement. So the Domestic Violence Amendment Bill addresses practical challenges, gaps, and anomalies which have manifested themselves since the Act was put into operation in 1999, rendering some women and children helpless to the violence they experience, often in the confines of their own homes. Now, the department has consulted with various experts. We hosted a workshop of experts, including members of civil society and the Interim Steering Committee on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. This was held in February. We published the draft bill for comment with a return date in March, and we extended that at the request of civil society to April. And we've incorporated the salient comments into the draft bill. We didn't receive any opposition to amending the Act, in contrast to actually a resounding support of amendments. Now, the bill is aligned with the priorities of government and the National Development Plan, and particularly to realize a developmental, capable, and ethical state that treats citizens with dignity and to ensure that all people live safely with an independent and fair criminal justice system. It aims to protect a particularly vulnerable segment of society and to make public servants accountable. I just want to state up front, because finance is always important, that with regard to the financial implications, that's just the slide one back. The financial implications, there are two aspects requiring funding, and both items are located within existing budgets. And this relates to the training of the directors for various departments who are critical role players, and then also for the upgrading of the integrated justice system to provide for the capturing of domestic violence protection orders on what we're proposing to be an integrated electronic repository. Thank you. So just with regards to setting the scene, now, although the law is not a panacea for the ills of a complex social phenomenon such as domestic violence, we all know that the law is a very blunt object. When victims of domestic violence do turn to the law for protection, we need the law to be effective and efficient in its response, and we owe it particularly to our children to stop the cycle of violence before it repeats itself. So the Domestic Violence Act, as it currently is, provides for an interim and or a final protection order with a suspended warrant of arrest. Now, the key challenges relate to implementation and barriers to uptake of this remedy, including, for example, interpretation of specific words, and you'll see that we're aiming to amend this. So the amendments, just in a nutshell, seek to optimize collaboration between departments to create a streamlined provision of services, a clear pathway of services within their existing mandates. It seeks to simplify and clarify the roles of all relevant stakeholders by expressly including the services to be rendered. Currently, the Act only refers to services to be rendered by the South African Police and the Department of Justice. Then the amendments also seek to enhance the application of the Act to provide the maximum protection available through a civil process. And this really acknowledges the complexities of violence in a relational context, because many people don't want to activate the justice system in terms of the criminal justice system, but they want the violence to stop, and that's the beauty of the civil procedure. One of the other aims of the amendment is to address identified gaps or shortcomings which impact on the optimal implementation of the Act. So briefly, the salient amendments contained in the bill seek to amend the Act to address language and practical challenges, and to align the Act with the Protection from Harassment Act. The Protection from Harassment Act contains mirror provisions to the Domestic Violence Act. And then to expand the definition of domestic violence, to expressly extend protection to the elderly, for example, and to expand on the content of acts of domestic violence, including coercive or controlling behavior. And then a novel proposal is to provide a secure online application for a protection order. And this will then run alongside a real-time or hard copy application, because not everyone has access to data at all times or to electronic devices. Now, with the shift to the online environment, the bill seeks to establish an integrated electronic repository to hold all documents relevant to the issuing of protection orders. Now, the aim of this is to make it available to all relevant government officials, and particularly at every police station, in the case that a protection order, for example, gets destroyed or lost. It also seeks to provide for services by other critical role players, including medical practitioners, social workers, and teachers, and this is coupled with directives for relevant departments. Now, service provision includes reporting, screening, counseling, referral to a suitable shelter, and provision of medical treatment. Now, as I said before, this is a big gap, because currently you have an Act of Domestic Violence and it goes from the South African Police straight to the Department of Justice. And we're trying to establish a clear pathway of services here. Specifically to the mandatory reporting clause, and the mandatory reporting clause obliges all with knowledge that an act of domestic violence has been perpetrated to report it to a social worker or to the South African Police, and to criminalize non-reporting. And this is really to address the prevalence of bystanderism, where we have a number of people who know of the domestic violence but don't do anything until it's too late, for example. I must just state that there's a difference here between reporting or obligatory reporting of domestic violence against children and adults. With regards to children, it's knowledge or suspicion or reasonable belief. And with regards to adults, it's only if you have knowledge of the domestic violence. This then brings me to the next clause, and this is providing for arrest without a warrant by a peace officer. Sorry, it's one slide back, please. So this is a provision for arrest without a warrant by a peace officer at the scene of domestic violence. So this means that the peace officer will have a discretion to arrest, and this is not just for where there is physical violence, but any act of domestic violence. And this is coupled with obligatory arrest or mandatory arrest where there is physical violence. There will be no choice then in that regard. The bill also seeks to enhance the powers of the South African Police in terms of search and entry of premises. And this is an empowering provision, but it is tightly circumscribed with only in circumstances with commensurate force. The court is also obliged to order the seizure of any weapon regardless of employment requirements if needed, and this would mean irrespective of whether it is a police official or a person working in as a security detail, for example. It also enables the court to conduct an inquiry in respect of the Prevention and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act and to commit the respondent to a treatment center for substance abuse. And this is particularly relevant because research from the World Health Organization shows that regulating harmful use of alcohol substantially reduces violence, as does the regulating of availability thereof. The bill also seeks to enhance penalties and recognize repeat or serial offenders. So without going into the whole sentencing regime, for example, a breach of a protection order currently has a penalty of 5 years. So what we're doing is adding on a second or a serial offender, it to be 10 years, for example. Not reporting or not complying with directives would be for a first offender 2 years and for a second offender 5 years. The bill also seeks to provide for mandatory prosecution where a weapon is used, and the victim has sustained a dangerous wound or is assaulted with the purpose of inflicting grievous bodily harm. And then last but not least, the bill seeks to amend Section 47 of the Superior Courts Act to allow for an application for a protection order against any judge of a superior court without prior permission being granted. The reason for having to do this amendment is that currently Section 47 states that no civil proceedings against a judge of a superior court may be instituted without the consent of the head of that court, or in the case of a head of court, consent of the Chief Justice or President of the SCA, which means that the wife or the husband of a judge in these circumstances would first have to obtain permission before being assisted by way of the Domestic Violence Act. Thank you so much. This brings me to the end of the presentation.
Thank you. That was focused and precise. Can we get the last presentation? Thank you, Ms. Clark.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Virginia and Alicia. I will be briefing the committee on the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Bill, one of the bills that has been given off to tighten the law around gender-based violence offenses. Next page, please. The primary aim of this bill is to address certain gaps that have been identified in legislation so as to afford protection to victims of gender-based violence against victimization during legal proceedings and also to make legal proceedings victim-centered. This bill amendment relates to, among others, the use of intermediaries and audiovisual means to give evidence, the expansion of the concept of visible evidence, the right of a victim in respect of parole proceedings, the entitlement of the state to appeal a sentence imposed by a high court sitting as a court of appeal, clarification of the offense of assault in schedules to the CPA, and minimum sentences. I'm going to tackle the bill through the subject matters addressed there too, and not necessarily according to the chronological order of the clauses. Next page, please. The first theme relates to the giving of evidence through intermediaries, audiovisual links, and through nonverbal expressions. The giving of evidence through intermediaries is an effective procedure to protect witnesses or complainants against victimization during court proceedings and is currently available to charged witnesses or complainants only, and also it's only available for criminal proceedings. And the use of audiovisual means ensures the availability of witnesses in court proceedings and also prevents harm to witnesses. Now, currently, the use of electronic media to give evidence is possible only in criminal proceedings. Clause 6 and 8 amends Section 158 and 170 capital A of the CPA as follows. The next page, please. Clause 6 provides that a witness can give evidence by means of electronic media, even if such witness is outside the Republic. Clause 8 extends the application of Section 178 of the CPA so as to allow witnesses with physical, psychological, mental, and emotional conditions, as well as witnesses who are defined as older persons in terms of the Older Persons Act, to give evidence through intermediaries. The clause also provides for the oath and competence of intermediaries to ensure that the right people are appointed to act as intermediaries. Mm-hmm. Clauses 1 and 8 amend the Magistrates' Court Act. Yeah. We should be on page 4, please. Thank you.
Clause 1 and Clause 18 amends the Magistrates Court Act and the Superior Court Act to provide for the giving of evidence through audiovisual links and through intermediaries in civil proceedings, as well as for the oath and competence of intermediaries. The next slide, please. Thank you. Clause 7 amends Section 161 of the Criminal Procedure Act to allow a witness whose physical, psychological, mental, or emotional condition inhibits their ability to give evidence orally. It enables them to give evidence through demonstrations, gestures, or any other form of nonverbal expression. Now, the amendments discussed so far are aimed at protecting victims against victimization during court proceedings, while at the same time giving victims a voice during court proceedings. We now move to amendments that relate to bail. Now, the following amendments are proposed to address shortcomings in the provisions of the CPA that regulate bail. Can you turn over, please, next page? Thank you. Clause 2 amends Section 59, which deals with police bail, and Clause 3 amends Section 59A, which deals with prosecutor bail. The effect of these amendments is that an accused who is in custody for an offense committed against a person who is in a domestic relationship with the accused, or for contravening a protection order to protect the complainant in question, will no longer be eligible for police or prosecutor bail. Now, such an accused person can only get bail during ordinary court hours. Shall we turn over, please, to the next slide? Clause 4 amends Section 60 of the CPA. Section 60 regulates bail application by an accused who is in custody. The provisions in this clause can be summarized as follows. A prosecutor must provide reasons for not opposing bail in respect of domestic relationship and protection order offenses. A court must consider the view of the victim of the offense regarding his or her safety. The grounds which do not permit the release of an accused on bail will now include the likelihood that the accused will endanger the safety of the person against whom the offense in question was allegedly committed, and any disposition on the accused to commit domestic relationship or protection order offenses. The onus will be on the accused who is charged with a protection order or a domestic relationship offense to adduce evidence which satisfies the court that the interest of justice permits his or her release on bail. Shall we turn over, please? Thank you. An accused is obliged to inform the court of protection orders that were issued to protect the victim against him or her, and whether the accused is on correctional supervision or parole at the time of the commission of the offense. And a court may, in respect of domestic relationship offenses, where there is no Domestic Violence Act protection order in place, and after a holding and inquiry, issue a GVA protection order against the accused. Clause 5 amends Section 68 to provide for additional grounds on which bail may be cancelled, and that is where the accused commits a protection order offence, it's not disclosed that a protection order was issued against him or her, or it's not disclosed that he or she was under correctional supervision when the offense was allegedly committed. Now, these amendments that relate to bail are aimed at ensuring the safety of the complainant and the safety of the public at large during the trial period. Can we move over to the next page, please? Clause 9 requires a court that sentences a person to imprisonment for a period of more than 7 years in respect of an offence committed against a person who is in a domestic relationship with a person so convicted, to inform the complainant or relative of the complainant of their right to participate in proceedings when the placement of the convicted person on parole is considered.
Clause 10 relates to the right of the state to appeal imposed sentences. Clause 10 amends Section 316 capital B of the CPA to allow the state to appeal a sentence imposed by a high court sitting as a court of appeal in circumstances where great failure of justice would otherwise result.
Your voice is faint. We can't hear you properly. Come closer to your mic. Thank you.
Okay. Noted, Chairperson. I'm going to come closer to... Why is this so long? Am I, can you hear me better now?
I can hear you properly now.
Thank you. Sorry about it. As I was saying, Clause 10 amends Section 316, capital B of the CPA to allow the state to appeal a sentence imposed by a high court sitting as a court of appeal in circumstances where grave failure of justice would otherwise result, or where administration of justice may be brought into disrepute. Sorry. Shall we move over to the next page, please? Thank you. Now, the amendments in clauses 11, 12, 13, and 14 provide for a comprehensive definition of the offense of assault in Schedules 1, 2, 7, and 8 of the CPA. Now, Schedule 1 is relevant to arrest without a warrant. Schedule 2 and 7 are relevant to police and prosecutor bail, whereas Schedule 8 is relevant to the obtaining of bodily samples. Now, this amendment will ensure that all serious forms of assault carry the same consequences in law. We now proceed to amendments to the Criminal Law Amendment Act, which deals with prescribed minimum sentences. Clauses 15 amends Part 1 of the schedule. Part 1 of this schedule lists offenses that carries a minimum sentence of life imprisonment. So 15 amends this part in order to include the murder of a person under the age of 18 years, and the death of a victim who was in a domestic relationship with the accused where such death resulted from physical or sexual abuse. Shall we turn over the question? Proceeding further provides for legal certainty regarding the imposition of life imprisonment where the victim is raped more than once by the accused and a co-perpetrator or an accomplice, and the said co-perpetrator or accomplice is not before the court or has not been convicted for rape. Or where the accused has been convicted of more than one rape in the same trial. Okay, the way the courts interpret and apply the current provisions is that when a victim of rape was raped by two people and only one of the perpetrators is convicted of the offense, the minimum sentence of life imprisonment is not applied, even if evidence during the trial proved that the victim was in fact raped by more than person. But now when the second perpetrator is convicted of rape, the minimum sentence of life imprisonment is applied.
So in a nutshell, it means that the first offender, in the case of gang rape, the first offender to be convicted gets off lightly.
Okay, at clause 15 also protects persons under the age of 18 and victims who are in a domestic relationship with a convicted person by prescribing minimum sentence of life imprisonment for these two offenses. Can you go to the next slide, please? Clause 16 amends part 2 of the schedule. Now, part 2 prescribes minimum sentences of 15 years for the first offender, 20 years for a second offender, and 25 years for third and subsequent offenders. Okay, now, the offenses of attempted murder, rape, or compelled rape committed in circumstances other than those referred to in part 1, sexual exploitation of a child or a person who is mentally disabled, and using a child or a person who is mentally disabled in pornographic purposes are currently listed in part 3 of the schedule. These offenses will now be moved to part 2 in terms of clause 16, and they will now carry heavier minimum sentences. They will also be on par with offenses such as robbery with aggravating circumstances or hijacking, dealing in drugs, firearms, and ammunition as far as sentencing goes. Thank you. Can you go to the next slide, please?
So 17 amends part 3 of the schedule. Offenses listed in part 3 carries a minimum sentence of 10 years for first offenders, 15 years for second offenders, and 20 years for third and subsequent offenders. Clause 17 adds to this part the offense of assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm, where the victim is or was in a domestic relationship with the accused, or when the offense is committed on a child who is either 16 or 17 years of age, and the age difference between the child and the person who has been convicted of the offense is more than 4 years. The aim of this second insertion is to avoid unintended consequences where the victim and the perpetrator are young people in the same age group. And that's all from me for now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Letswalo, Ms. Clark, and Ms. Botha, for those presentations. Those are the presentations on these interlinked items, honorable members. I now want to recognize the following speakers, and in this order. Honorable Stephen Swartz will start, followed by Honorable Noma Themba Maseko Jele, to be followed by Honorable Werner Horn, to be followed by Honorable Yoli Sayago, and also to have Honorable Valma Drehen Mivot. I understand that Honorable Mufukeng and Glenn said they might not be with us at this time. So that is the order, honorable members, for your interventions and contributions to these discussions. Honorable Stephen Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Deputy Minister and to the Department for the briefing and for the extensive work that has been done with this legislation. It is a matter, obviously, of great national concern, great national interest, and there has been some concerns expressed about the delay in bringing the bills, but we appreciate that they are now before us. Can I just ask generally, and Chair, I might need your guidance here, just the public comments that were received, it might be helpful that we receive them, although obviously we will, as Parliament, be advertising for public comments as well. But there are, I understand, from the presentation, some aspects that were said to be controversial that were included, and it might be helpful for us to look at those public comments from the department's side as well. I just wanted to make a few general comments. Obviously, we will be going into a lot more detail with the different presentations, but on the sexual offences amendment bill, the broadening of the definitions is definitely supported, although one needs to just look very carefully at the implications of having sexual penetration and sexual violation as sexual acts. One would have to look at that and the implications of the register. On the domestic violence side, we appreciate this is an informal briefing and that the bill will be tabled. Obviously, that does impact. We would need to know when it's been tabled, because clearly one would want to invite public comment on all three bills at the same time. Maybe the Deputy Minister can respond to that. It's obviously sad, Chair, that we have to insert a clause to deal specifically with judges accused of domestic violence. I would think that possibly the nomination and the appointment process of judges, one needs to look more carefully. I understand the need for this, and I support the need for it, but it is indeed deeply saddening that you would think that judicial officers that uphold the law should not be accused of domestic violence, but if in reality it is happening, and therefore I understand and support the need for that insertion. Then just on the last criminal laws, on the issue relating to the minimum sentencing, I'm just interested, I would need to go through it in a lot more detail. I support the broadening, one supports the whole ambit to try and increase sentencing, tighten up bail, tightening up parole as well. I'm just a bit, maybe I can just have greater clarity on the assault GBV, why there is this need for a four-year differential. Understand on the same age, but surely assault GBV is the same, and I would need a bit more explanation on that. Clearly, just broadly speaking, I think that the avoidance of secondary trauma of sexual victims is to be supported as much as possible. That's why the intermediaries is so important, and the ways of, even with the domestic violence, to apply online for those orders is very innovative, and it is something that one needs to look at very carefully, something that one should support, but one clearly needs to have a look at the practical implications. And just as a last word, Chair, we will need as a committee to look at the implementation of these incredible laws that we pass. Often it comes down to the implementation by the relative law enforcement agencies, where we pass these laws, and the challenge comes down on capacity to implement at a police station level, at a detective's level, at a social worker's level. That is a broader issue we will need to consider. But thank you again, Chair. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honourable Swart. Before I just hold on, Honourable Maseko Jail, this is how I'm going to do it. I'm going to ask the DM and his team to immediately respond to those issues raised by Honourable Swart. Before I go to the next member, at least I've got four speakers. I can manage this up until 12, so that once the issues are fresh, to quickly respond to them. Honourable John Jeffrey and your team, any issues that you want to respond to Honourable Swart before I take the next speaker?
Chair, just from my side, look, I'm sure the copies of the submissions that were made can be sent to the portfolio committee if they want. Obviously, you've got to conduct your own hearings, but you can be sent that information as well. That's the only thing I wanted to respond to at this stage.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Borda, Clark, and Letswalo, anything you want to respond to quickly on Honorable Swart's contribution?
Thank you, Chair. I've noted the concern expressed or caution about the sexual violence and sexual penetration and vis-a-vis the definition of sexual act. We will look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Anybody else from your team before I proceed?
Yes, Litwalo
here. And Litwalo, before you speak, because you have a tendency of being on and off, fading away. I don't know whether I can say sit up, do this, get closer, because I struggle to hear you all the time. Please go ahead, respond.
Sorry about that. I will speak closer to my mic as much as I can. With regards to the more than 4-year differentiation when it comes to the minimum sentences prescribed for assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm, the aim here is to avoid unintended consequences where the victim and the perpetrator are two people in the same age group. No, we are not saying that there should not be consequences when there is a violence or assault between people who are in the same age group, but we are saying that the application of this provision in such instances would simply be too harsh. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I proceed, I guess, Ms. Clark, there's nothing you want to say at this stage. Let me proceed. Any follow-ups I'll take at the end.
Chair, sorry, just a quick one on Mr. Swart's point. I mean, obviously, implementation is the key. That's always the key. And so that really goes without saying, but we all know it's a major problem, sometimes at the police stations, but sometimes either at the courts. So people go to the courts for protection orders and they get turned away. That's obviously completely unacceptable, and we've got to put an end to it.
Thank you very much, DM. I now recognize the Honorable Nomathemba Maseko Jede. It's your turn.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much also to the DM and the team. We welcome the presentation. I just want to begin on the very same issue of implementation. I think I support Honorable Swart on issues of implementation, because it will be no use for us to bring these laws and when they have to be implemented, and that's where the whole thing is messed up. So we must come up with a strategy, Chairperson, as to maybe we follow up on these issues so that our work is implemented in a manner that we see a good results. And my first comment, Chair, is on the national registration. This one, I heard the presenter talking about the period that the offender must remain on this register. But my concern, Chair, is that if I heard her properly, she was indicating that it will depend with the sentence. That is my worry. That's where is my worry, because if you are saying it will depend with the sentence, I just imagine, Chairperson, recently we were hearing about the magistrate somewhere in KwaZulu-Natal where he issued very minimal small sentences when it comes to these issues. So if we're going to leave this matter on the issue of sentences, it worries me very much, Chair. Can we just maybe have a comment on that one? And then the second one, Chair, also, it is on the issue of, I wanted to find out on the protection order, the issues of the interdict. There are some women who die with these papers on their hands. And I'm not sure exactly what is the weight that these orders have carry. If maybe we can be, you know, taken into confidence with the weight of these protection orders, maybe we would understand exactly why women die having those interdict in their disposal. And then the last one, Chair, I think it's on the issue of the issue of, I hear the one of the presenters also talking about the sexual act between the same age group. I can imagine if maybe this one of incest, where the brother, in fact, in our area recently, we got the report where a brother was sleeping with the sister for some time. I'm not sure how we're going to, in future, looking into that in order to make sure that it doesn't happen. And we have something that we will really stop that, so that the parents also, they become very careful in making sure that we don't get that situation. Can I get a comment on that one, Chair? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Maseko Jele, Team Justice, Letswalo, Clark Botha, and the DM. Can you respond to those issues raised by Honorable Maseko Jele before I proceed to the next speaker?
As the chairperson, I've witnessed the concern of the member, and we will look into that. All that I want to say is, at present, if you look at Section 51 of the Act, it already links the period within which the name will remain on the register with the type of sentence. For instance, in a case where a person has been sentenced for conviction of sexual offence to a term of imprisonment, periodical imprisonment, correctional supervision, or to imprisonment as contemplated in a certain section of the CPA, without the option of a fine for a period of at least 6 months, but not exceeding 18 months, and whether the sentence was suspended or not, may on application as contemplated in a certain section be removed. So what we've done, we have only extended the period for which the name should have been stayed on or remained on the list. In the Act already, there's that linkage with the type of imprisonment and or type of sentence given, but we've noted that. The other issue of the question of incest, where the brother was sleeping with the sister, I can just refer to, I think it's clause 5, if I'm not mistaken, or clause 12, clause 5, no, it's clause 12, where we said that where, as at present in terms of the law, it is an offence. If you sleep with your sister, and it's a case where there is an act, what they call sexual penetration, then it's already offence. What we've added now is where there is even not sexual penetration, but also sexual violation. But except where there's, if it's a child is one of them. But that this is, we can have a look and see to what extent the issues that this member, honourable member raised, how we can further tighten up that. But we've changed it to also cover and protect children further in that sense, so that we will look at it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other additions? Before I proceed?
Yes, Honourable Chair, if I may, please.
Yes, Ms. Clark.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chair, and to Honourable Maseko Jele. I just want to respond to your question on the protection order and persons dying with the protection order in hand. And I think I just reflect back to this is really a complex social phenomenon. And the law is honestly just a very blunt object. But what we're trying to do with this is establish a collaborative approach. So currently, you'll have a protection order that's issued with a suspended warrant of arrest. And as soon as the person, the abuser has contravened the protection order, the suspended warrant of arrest is activated. What we're then saying is that the police would then be able to arrest the person immediately. There are implementation challenges currently. So what we're saying is, with the electronic integrated system, that the order would be available at all police stations or accessible. So even if the paper gets lost or destroyed by the abuser, which often happens, it would be available for them to implement the warrant of arrest. And also to look at the clear pathway of services. And that's why we've included all the other government departments officials, so that a person would be able to be referred to a shelter or to any other services. So it truly is, I think, moving towards a collaborative approach to try and give as much protection as one can to a victim of domestic violence. But unfortunately, violence does escalate and the person doesn't have a person assigned to them to protect them at every phase of the process. So I think that the bill is just aiming to provide, you know.
Hello?
Protective measures.
Okay.
Measures.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. She's disconnected. I will now proceed to the next speaker. Honorable Werner Horn, can you contribute, please?
Thank you, Acting Chair. And I think from our side also, I think the tabling and hopefully our speedy processing of these bills will hopefully assist to address the scourge of gender-based and sexual violence. Chair, I will try and limit my input to a few initial observations and questions. Firstly, in respect of both the amendment to the Sexual Offences Amendment Bill regarding the proposal that all offenders now be included in the National Sexual Offenders Register, as well as the proposals in respect of the amendments to the Criminal Procedure Act in respect of bail, I would like to ask whether the department has embarked on an exercise to have the proposals constitutionally vetted. So the difficulty is from my initial assessment is that obviously it's our duty as the legislature to pass only constitutionally compliant legislation. And as we know, well, it's part of life, but we can say it's unfortunate that there is a growing trend where the Constitutional Court finds some of the measures we pass to be not constitutional in nature. So immediately when I see proposals to say that all offenders will be included in the Sexual Offences Register, and when one thinks, for example, about the offence, which we're not opposing, of sexual intimidation, which, for example, has no element of physical violence in it, then one must wonder whether going forward somebody will not attack the inclusion of offenders who've been found guilty of the sexual intimidation offence, for example, in the offenders register, if one looks at the aim of the register. Similarly, with the strengthened the proposal strengthen the bail regime. Obviously, it is something that should be strengthened. Let me say that at the outset, because we read too much in our newspapers and see in our news bulletins of people who are out on bail, who then reoffend commit heinous crimes. But we still sit with a situation where people have basic rights, and we must ask the question, I think, whether the department has embarked on an exercise to look at, for example, whether the whole issue of the reverse onus will be constitutionally compliant. And similarly, I would, for example, think that we could balance the new proposals where only a court can grant bail if we can make available specifically over weekends and public holidays, courts sitting to deal with these bail applications. Because the other side of this coin is, we all know that also, that if the system is going to be abused, it's going to be abused on a Friday or a Saturday, and then quite possibly the rights of an wrongly accused person could be infringed seriously by the blunt instrument that the new bail provisions could turn out to be. So that's the first question. Secondly, in respect of the online system and the online repository, I think it's something that must be welcomed. Obviously, once again, in respect of implementation, we will have to have a separate engagement with the department to see to what extent systems has been developed and evolved to enable for that. So that is to be welcomed. Finally, I think two other issues I want to raise in respect of the protection orders is the, I think it is quite sensible and from the department side to say that we want to place the emphasis on the civil nature of this so that victims are not being put off by the fact that there is a possible criminal record involved, which could act as a hurdle preventing them from embarking on obtaining the protection order. Unfortunately, I think Ms. Clark has just now again referred to the involvement of police stations. I want to ask whether it should not be contemplated, given the serious nature and it has been called our second pandemic of late, whether we shouldn't also include other service providers within both the public and the private sectors, at least also putting an obligation on them to act as referral points, so that it is ultimately not only the duty of the police to refer people to the right places to obtain protection orders. That's the one thing. The second thing is in respect of the related services. I welcome the by name mentioning of social workers and doctors, etc., etc. But I think the one thing, if we look at a long-term addressing of the complex nature of gender-based and domestic violence in our country, is that I think we must also consider placing a very specific duty in terms of the Act to refer minor children, even if they are secondary victims of domestic and gender-based violence, for very specific treatment by way of programs, so that we don't see this vicious cycle being repeated by way of specifically minor boy children seeing what is happening and unfortunately getting the very subtle message that this is part of the way we interact as genders with one another. So I want to know whether the department has considered placing a specific duty on referring minor children who are peripheral or secondary victims in these circumstances also to undergo very specific programs and treatments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM Jeffries and your team. Quick responses and comments?
Yeah, just on the issue of the constitutionality, as Honourable Horn should know, bills have to be certified by the state law advisors as being constitutionally compliant, in other words, consistent with the constitution before they're introduced. So that has been done. However, as you'd also know, there can be a lot of debate as to what is consistent with the constitution and what isn't. You just have to see the way the Con Court often overturns the SCA or the high courts on issues where they would have a different ruling, a different understanding. I think the issue here would be the decision now is going to be with Parliament, and it would also though depend in some cases one wants to try. Issues of is it reasonable and justifiable to have this crime of sexual intimidation and include that on the sex offenders register? Well, it's often a political decision as to, well, it may be dubious, but let's include it and see what the court says, whether it agrees it's compliant or not. But obviously the intention of the executive and Parliament is to pass legislation that is consistent with the Constitution. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Letswalo, Clark or Boota, any of you who wants to offer a comment?
If I may, please, Chairperson.
Yes, you cut off before Boota. The line was not good. Yes?
My apologies for that. With regard to the...
Clark? I've never recognized Clark. Wait, Ms. Boota.
Just with regards to the duty of referring peripheral domestic violence against minor children, I think that's just such a key issue. And if I can refer you to the expanded definition of domestic violence, one of the innovative inclusions is that exposing or subjecting a child to behavior as listed as domestic violence is an act of domestic violence itself. So that would mean that if a teacher or a medical practitioner or any other person in a service provider role were to find that the child has been exposed to domestic violence, which would also be the secondary domestic violence, they would then have an obligation to refer the child. So I hope that addresses that point. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Botha?
Thank you very much. If I'm allowed just to add one or two things to what the Deputy Minister raised is, Ms. Ora, I think you're very much aware of the fact that there are no hierarchy of rights, and that once again the question that you raised will be about competing rights, the right of dignity and the right of privacy of the perpetrator, vis-a-vis the right of access to information from the member of public side, but also freedom and security of a person in the sense of to be free from all forms of violence from either public or private sources. I can just mention one example is that, and there was a case like that, and unfortunately I was a prosecutor, where the person used a plumber and they raped mentally this retarded woman. So I would like to see whose names on the register before I let people into my house where I live. Isn't that my right in order to secure my freedom? And also the other thing is what we should not forget is, even though there are a lot of cases that are the proceedings are held behind closed doors, that's not always the case. So a lot of the information on who did what is already in the public domain. But I do agree with the DM that we will see what's going on and how parliamentary advisors will look at it.
Thank you. Any word, Ms. Letswalo?
No, nothing from me, but here, let's come at me. Thank you.
Thank you. I proceed to the next speaker.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Sorry, it's Robert from the department. I haven't got one of that hands on my computer. But relating to the reverse onus in both proceedings, if you look at section 16, as far as I can remember, section 6011 of the Criminal Procedure Act, if a certain person is charged with an offence in Schedule 5 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which includes, amongst others, treason, murder, rape, and certain statutory offences, the accused must be kept in custody unless he or she adduces evidence to the court which permits his release. So the reverse onus is already there in Section 60 of the Criminal Procedure Act. Insofar as it relates to both proceedings in terms of the bill, I think the Honourable Mr. Horn's comment possibly directed at contravention of protection orders in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, the Protection of Harassment Act, or other orders that is issued by the court to protect a victim against the accused person. In that instance, there's already a court order in place that tells the accused person, please do not further victimize or commit offenses against the victim. But that person disregards this. So if a court already prohibits him to do that act and he continues with that, I do not see that it's a problem to impose such an onerous obligation on him to prove to the court that he will no further embark on such conduct. I think that is justifiable in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Yolisa Iago. I know you did say that you knew, but I'm sure you're not new on these matters.
Okay, Inkosi Chair, I really just have a comment or a few comments to make. I wasn't privy to the documents prior to this meeting, but I think I can just honestly say that it's about time that domestic violence and gender-based violence is criminalized. But also, in as much as we can pass the laws or we can advocate for bills to be renewed and add clauses, the buck stops with SAPS. If SAPS does not want to take the matters of gender-based violence and sexual violence seriously, then that means that we're doing nothing as a committee. And I just wanted to know, is there any way to criminalize lack of action from the SAPS in order that if a woman is beaten by her husband, a policeman is duty-bound to take that matter seriously? If a woman is raped, a policeman is duty-bound to take that woman through the necessary procedures so that they are able to see that the law takes its course. Also, I believe that the sexual offenders register is very important because people in the matter of Oinene Hogyana, who was violated by a man who had previous convictions, had we had the register, maybe prior to his employment into the post office, we might have flagged it. It might have prevented a lot of people from dying. So that is my comment, basically, is that in as much as we want to advocate for the bills to be passed, and in as much as we want to expedite or fast-track the moving of these bills, but we also really want to make sure that SAPS, who is there at the forefront or the first line of action, take these matters very seriously. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. As a quick one comment, but also a specific question about criminalizing non-action. Anybody I DM or anybody else?
Just to start, I think the officials can go on to the issue of criminalizing non-action, but just to say, I mean, GBV and domestic violence are already criminalized. These bills are tightening up the existing laws. So just to clarify that. And then secondly, with the National Register of Sex Offenders, as was explained, it was people who'd committed acts of violence against, had committed sexual offenses against children and people with mental disabilities. And would only be, and now it's being extended to include all people who've committed sexual offences. So I can't remember his first name, Mr. Buerta, the person who killed Uyinene Rechana, would have his name on the register now. However, in terms of the way the bill is phrased, it's only if you're working with vulnerable people that your employer would have to check your name against the sexual offences register. So even with the current position, the post office would not have had to have checked whether he was on the sex offenders register or not. We did consider that, but the result, the consequence of that is no person who has been convicted of a sexual offence would ever get a job again after they're released from prison. That's the problem with going so wide. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, DM. Any other quick comment from the team before I proceed to the next speaker?
To you, Honourable Chair, may I respond to Honourable Yaku, please?
Yes.
I'd just like to say that with the deliberations of the Domestic Violence Act in 1998, there was a consideration of criminalizing the actions of police for not responding. And after due consideration, the Parliament decided to institute Section 18 of the Act, which then says that the national instructions must be issued in terms of national instructions must be issued, which actually explains exactly how police officers should act in an instance of domestic violence, and it specifically states that failure by a member of the South African police to comply with an obligation in the Act or in the national instructions will then constitute misconduct, which may mean that the person could then lose their jobs.
So it is quite a severe consequence already encapsulated in the Act. However, the police response, I think, needs to be seen within a collaborative response, and that's why we're looking at a clear pathway of services so that the police are not then your social workers and everybody else. You actually have each person taking their role and fulfilling their obligation in terms of their own mandate.
All right. Thank you very much. And I'll proceed to the last member, Honorable Valma. It's your turn.
Great. Thank you, Chair. Just before I ask my questions, I would like the department to just learn the specific terminology, the appropriate and inappropriate terminologies. We do not say mentally retarded anymore. So please do not use the term retarded. It's insulting to the disabled community. Rather say mentally disabled. Okay. There's many terminologies that the department should just learn to ensure that they're using the appropriate terminologies, especially with regards to people with disability. Now, my questions. I see nothing covers when women in a domestic violence issue makes a charge at the police station, that when it happens that they withdraw, maybe due to the family saying or pressuring them to withdraw, what can be done about that? I don't see anything covering that. But there's a lot of violence, you know, domestic violence and all of that happening. But what happens if a person does withdraw? Then my second thing, the electronic protection orders. If a person doesn't have access to the internet, can an organization, for example, when there's a deaf person who does not have access to the electronic means or electronic devices or data for that matter, can there be an organization, can an organization assist that person with applying for a protection order? To give an example, if are there going to be electronic devices in the police stations or the care centers, if that is there, but if the staff cannot communicate with a deaf person, because normally they would then go to organizations who provide services to the deaf, like the Deaf Federation of South Africa, where they have people who can sign and can understand them and have the means and devices to apply for the protection order. Will that be allowed? Can that be done? And I am very concerned that the bills cover only mental disability. I am happy that it does cover all vulnerable groups, because I am concerned that people who are deaf, who need to make a statement at the police station or in the courts, they must have a sign language interpreter present. And we know that sometimes the police write these statements without understanding what the victim has said, because they themselves did not get a sign language interpreter. So it must cover all people with disabilities, all children with disabilities as well. You find a case where a child is abused in the school by an educator, right? And now the children wants to make a statement, but maybe the educator is a friend with the interpreter. So the child does not want to say anything. So we need to consider how children with disabilities or children who are deaf, when they have access, you know, when they get access, want to make a statement, that they don't get a sign language interpreter just from the school necessarily, but a deaf person who can assist them. Because we have a problem in the courts currently that, yes, the courts appoint or they say they appoint sign language interpreters, but the people who need to use the services don't necessarily understand that person. So organizations like DeafSub provide deaf relay interpreters, but the magistrates don't don't allow these people access because they're not on the roll, then they're not allowed to have access to interpret. But that assists us in the many magistrates don't allow outside interpreters or not court appointed interpreters. So we also have deaf auxiliary workers who maybe there's a deaf person who has never been to school, who doesn't know sign language. There must be alternative ways to be able to communicate. So like with the example with the intermediaries, you know, how we can use them, how are those people used? And then we need to look at how we can then also use deaf auxiliary workers and assistants in that place. I think there's one honourable member who covered me with regard to children, but I wanted to look at adults. When the abuser is in detention or is charged to go to jail, what counselling is given to the victim? We always hear women and children, they go for counseling. Oh, sorry, not to the victim, but to the perpetrator. What counseling is given to the perpetrator to understand that what he did was wrong, the abuse that he did, the rape that he did. What counseling does he get? What kind of violence he perpetrated? You know, it's not only the child or the woman or the victim that needs to get counseling, but also adults before they are released, if they cannot be a part of community, that, you know, because they might be serial offenders, that kind of thing. So what kind of counseling is provided to the perpetrator? I think I'm covered, Chairperson. Let me just, yes, I'm covered. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Velma. Quick responses to those comments and few questions, Tim Justice. Clark, Litswalo, Buerta, and then the DM will come last.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Yes.
And to you, Honourable Member, if I may just say that we need to differentiate here between laying a criminal charge and applying for the civil procedure of a protection order. But with regards to the amendment bill, or the draft amendment bill, what we include a mandatory arrest where there is physical violence, and we also provide for mandatory prosecution where a weapon is used or the victim has sustained a dangerous wound or is assaulted with the purpose of inflicting grievous bodily harm. Now, this is at odds a little bit because the choice is then removed from the victim, and you may have to declare the person a hostile witness if she doesn't want to proceed or if she's been intimidated by somebody. But that is particularly included where a person has been encouraged to withdraw a charge, for example. So there is that mandatory arrest. And then with regards to the electronic application, already as it stands currently, just in the written applications, you may apply for a protection order on behalf of somebody else, whereas an adult with their consent. So that I could think that would might be work the same with regards to an electronic application, and we're looking at something towards a declaratory application, so that could be something that could be factored in. I hope that addresses those points. Thank you.
Thank you. Litswalo.
Thank you. With regards to alternative ways to accommodate deaf persons who do not know the sign language, currently Section 161 of the CPA actually allows a person who is deaf to give evidence in the form of gestures. So deaf people who are not familiar with sign language are currently accommodated for in the law as it stands right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Buerta.
I think it may be premature for me to say that, but I'm going to nevertheless say that. You may recall that in the final speech earlier this year, the President has indicated that South African Sign Language must be recognized as an official language. So the Department of Justice is busy with that process, and I trust that some of the problems that were referred to by the previous speaker would be solved through engagements between us and the NGOs working in this field, as well as other government departments. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Chairperson, if you can give me a chance. It's Robert again from Justice. Regarding the reference to mentally retarded, that currently appears in Section 4 of the Domestic Violence Act. That section or that expression is repealed, so no further reference is made to a person that is mentally retarded. With further regarding the withdrawal of protection orders, I believe that is adequately catered for in Section 10 of the Domestic Violence Act, which stipulates that a complainant, as far as I can remember, who wants to change a protection order or varies it, the court must be satisfied that the complainant does that freely and voluntarily. So there is a protection measure in place to deal with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robert. Sir, last word, DM, on the matter before we wrap up.
Yeah, no, Chair. Look, I mean, the purpose of this was a briefing to the committee on the bill. It's then for the committee to decide the public participatory process. Obviously, it needs to be thorough. The usual, I think, period is 3 weeks. If it is, you could go for longer, but if you go for 3 weeks, then please make sure there's a lot of publicity over the fact that these bills are out for public comment.
All right. Thank you very much, DM. Honorable members, I hope you're fine, because I'm just looking at my time. I don't have an indication that you want to any follow-up before I wrap up on this.
Just a clarity from my side, and that is just on the criminal matters bill, just on the domestic violence, I understood it hasn't been tabled yet. Can I just get clarity? Because obviously we're going to advertise it's first got to be tabled when that will take place. What did I mishear on that issue? I might have misheard. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other follow-up from the members before we ask the DM and team? None. Thank you. DM and your team?
Yes, correct. It hasn't been tabled yet, but I expect it will be in the next few days. I don't know if anybody else from the department has any further information on where it is.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, members, and thank you to everybody. But just as a wrap-up, as a summary, I think there are two or three important issues that are coming out of this raised by the members. Honorable Swart, on Jala as well, the issue, and it's both for us in the legislature, the committee, and as well as the department. For us, the issue of public hearings, just to the team, the committee, we are going to need a roadmap, a plan on these public hearings, so that we have a proper plan that we know from start to finish. This is how the public hearings are going to be, that 3 to 4 week kind of issues included in that. So I'm going to ask the committee to put that together so that we have that when we meet. This is a very important matter that must not get sidetracked on it. And on the department side, Honorable DM, is the issue about the implementation. It means that at some point we're going to have to hear from the department the capacity in the department to be on top of this during and even post the enactment of all of this, what kind of capacity that you have in the department to ensure that we don't have any of these usual blockages. So we're going to flag that issue so that you can go back and prepare and prioritize or share with us how you yourself, because I'm sure that you have already started, we wouldn't be having these bills when you have not thought about that in terms of how we're going to be running with those. Those are just my last comments on this. I think this item therefore concluded, colleagues, before we go to the last.
I'm sorry, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My name is Teresa Ross. I'm speaking from Mr. Ra-
Yes.
My name is Teresa Ross. I'm speaking from Mr. Sarah Roberts' computer. I want to talk to the issue of the introduction of the domestic violence amendment bill as to when the introduction will be. We envisage the bill being introduced by tomorrow, latest Thursday. Thank you, Chair.
All right. No, I think the DM will make sure that we, so in the next 2 days, that's what you're saying. So by Friday, everything should be in place. I hope that that assists the Honorable Swast in terms of the question that you asked. That wraps up that part, Honorable Members and everybody. I'd want us to proceed to the next item. Thank you very much, Team Justice and the DM on this matter. We clearly have got to have our eye on the ball on these issues. These are important matters in the pulse of our nation. Thank you very much. The next item, which should be a quick one, Honorable Members, is the issue of the committee, the cyber crime, which I remember 2 weeks back we did attend to this matter. So I am inviting if there are any other new or serious comment. Otherwise, the item should be an item for us really for noting and it gets concluded and processed. Committees Sia and Bonani or any members or the DM, if anybody else wants to comment on that.
Afternoon, Chair.
Yes.
Chair, because we've received few apologies, Chair, I just forgot to text you on the side, Chair. We propose that can we just adopt the report maybe by tomorrow? Because it's just a paragraph, Chair. We'll then send out the report today because it's just a matter of adopting the report. The deliberations are finished. And then, can we just send out the report immediately after this meeting to members? It's a paragraph.
All right. That's what I wanted to say. I see your hand, DM.
Look, it's really just a concern. The acceptance of the NCOP amendments was made at the last committee meeting, or at a committee meeting about a fortnight ago. There is no change. It's accepting all the amendments. That's all. I asked at that meeting, so now is this approved? And was told, yes, it is. So I'm a bit concerned about this two-week delay. What's the point of it? I thought the committee had approved the NCOP amendments. What is this report that is being spoken about? This bill has been in the pipeline for some time. It is a complicated bill, but it's now completed. It needs to be passed so the president can assent to it. We are having a problem with cybercrime. I don't understand, Chair, the two-week delay. I mean, and as I said, at the meeting where the NCOP amendments were discussed, they were accepted. I said, you know, is there anything more that needs to be done? Was told no. You don't need to vote. Everybody's accepted it. Why has it not been ATC'd yet? Why are they coming back now with a report which presumably is just going to say what the committee decided on at its meeting a fortnight ago, that it accepts the NCOP amendment. I don't find this acceptable, Chair.
Thank you, DM.
Chair, Wilma's hand is up.
Yes, Wilma.
Thank you very much, Chair. I see that on the agenda it says adoption of the report, but we've not seen a report at all. And I know we accepted it. We agreed to the amendments at the 2 weeks, the meeting 2 weeks ago, but there is no report that we've seen that we can adopt.
All right. Fia, you want to speak to that or any other member?
Yes, Chair. Since the bill was the amendments from the NCOP has proposed, the committee has accepted them. There are no further amendments in the bill, but we have to send it for typesetting so that we can get a C version of the bill. We're still awaiting that. We've been delayed by the campaign that is being outsourced by Parliament. Hence, I was saying, Chair, we're going to follow that up and the report immediately after this meeting. I will engage with yourself. And then we send the paragraph report because we can't take the bill to the NA without a report of our own as the committee. The committee needs to report, even if it's a paragraph, to say we as the NA committee accept the changes from the NCOP. So we can't just take an agreement from the committee and say the committee agrees. It's a paragraph, Chair. It's not a lengthy report. We can even start with it tomorrow and we ATC it tomorrow.
Can you have that tomorrow?
Yeah, can I come in? Can I come in? I don't even know if it is a paragraph. It's a sentence. The committee accepts the proposed NCOP amendments. That's all it is. It's a sentence. Okay. But that's what the committee did 2 weeks ago. So why I don't understand what's going on.
Okay. No, Honourable DM, we will finalise it tomorrow. Can we have that in our meeting tomorrow? It's just a matter of hours between now and then. Yes. If members are happy with that, and then the matter gets to be concluded tomorrow, is that fine?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Any other comment? Otherwise, that's. The end of our session. None. Thank you very much, honorable members. That concludes our meeting. See you tomorrow.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.